Hey, I'm Allison, host of Fine Cut, a podcast where a guest brings a scene they have strong feelings about, love, hate, curiosity, from any form of media, and then we discuss the heck out of it for 20 minutes. It's a blast. Join us. Hello, everyone. I'm Allison. Welcome to Fine Cut. This week, I have Michelle Yang, writer and mental health advocate, joining me. And I'm so excited about this conversation because Michelle always has really thoughtful ideas and observations, and this is no exception. So what is the scene that you chose, Michelle, and why?
Yeah, I chose the show. I chose the first episode scene in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the new show. And it's when Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Donald Glover, and Maya Erskine's character sit down to on their first assignment, and they're spying on, their target, and to blend into the restaurant, they order, they order from their waiter, and Maya's character, so I keep calling her Maya. It's easier since their names are Mr. and Mrs.
Jane,
Smith.
Jane and John.
Yeah, Jane orders a coffee and a croissant, and then he orders a green tea. But when the wait staff brings out the order, they try to give her the green tea and him the coffee, and it was just so subtle because it's just like an assumption that this Asian woman would want green tea, and it really felt really true to life, because that sort of thing happens to me all the time when I'm out with my spouse who is white. And but not only because of the, the Asian white thing, but also the gender thing. Cause it's if he orders a salad and I order, a burger or something, like I always get the salad, and, they like insist on it. Like, even if I was like, no, I order the other thing, it just seems like they try to like, no, but you order the salad, right?
Going to say that happens. Often do order the salad, to be honest, but like when I don't, they do assume. And also obviously it happens with the check, although I have noticed that happening less and less over the years. It used to be just an immediate give it to the man, where they seem like they're more intentional about putting it in between. Than they used to be.
And as somebody who grew up in the restaurant business, like we were more casual. We didn't have table service, the restaurant that I grew up in. I think that's why this scene fascinated me so much. And like the restraint the filmmakers practiced and not like hitting you over the head with it, like, oh, why did they get the green tea or whatever, and there was another subtlety involved where Jane orders a coffee and then at the last minute and a croissant, I'm sure like she was just like, oh no, I don't need anything to eat, and then she adds the croissant, it all felt really true to life for me. I enjoyed it.
Well, and I love you pointing it out too, because I clocked it, but of course I clocked it as the gender difference, because you don't know what you don't know, so I was like, oh, they gave her the green tea because she's the lady and they assume that but I, of course, it's on that level as well. It's the race and the gender. It's not just the gender, but as you're watching a show, you just sort of clock stuff and move on. But I definitely was like, oh, that makes sense. And the scene resonated with me too, just because of the awkward conversation that people who are thrown in together in this way have. And I thought the filmmakers did a great job of capturing, like, what would it be like if you're thrown into this life with someone you barely know and you're trying to take on new identities and also appear totally natural and comfortable with one another in a public setting. And I thought the tension of this scene was very satisfying. But the thing that you brought up, and I want to say, we're not intending to divulge spoilers during this episode. Like, this is not a spoiler filled episode, but spoilers may be shared throughout. So if you haven't watched the show and you're intending to do so and you don't know what happens, please be aware. What I thought was interesting too, Michelle, is you felt like this was a recurring theme throughout the show. This kind of addressing in subtle ways the microaggressions, or, the assumptions that are made about Jane and John. So,
well, I don't,
other...
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily call it like the microaggressions. I feel like it's really the fascinating part is like how John is using those to his advantage, like using the stereotypes to his advantage. It's almost like taking back the word or whatever, you know. It's like it, he's like he's, you know, it's like taking the power.
I guess it's just the one at the ski place. That's the one I was thinking of when I said that.
Right.
That he, that
but even
the,
that he's
but
like
the,
your rules do
right.
not apply to me, you know,
Right.
like he by he takes advantage of the stereotypes,
He
right? So
definitely does. I was saying
yeah,
the white guy who's like, you don't belong here, essentially, that was the,
right,
you
like
know.
yeah, because I mean, so we talking about the examples that
Yeah.
just in the first few episodes, you know, in episode one, like the scene that Donald Glover makes is just like he takes off his jacket and he's wearing a tank top underneath, right? And like starts screaming at the street vendor, and like he becomes from a very respectable person to a scary black man, you know? And then everybody freaks out, and it was like very easily he used his race very effectively to create a diversion, right? And then
Because he needs, they need to distract somebody because
yeah,
they need to snatch a
the
package.
package, yeah,
And so
for
he
their
says,
version,
you know,
yeah.
I got this. She'll swerve to the left because he
Yeah,
knows he's going to create a
big
distraction, a
scene,
scene.
yeah, big scary scene, yeah.
And it was interesting seeing the scene, quote unquote, within the context of it being constructed. Like how much less, quote unquote, scary it is because you know it's not real. And I thought that there is something that's being said here about how so many things that we're afraid of are constructed. I think the show is making a larger point about that. But I think this
Yeah.
scene specifically is also like, we don't often look below the surface
Right.
in our life
Yeah.
to consider what is actually happening. And I thought that was a great example of that. Like we just accept it as the stereotype that we have become used to
Yeah.
instead of questioning it or thinking about it in a deeper way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that all of this, I think, is character setting, because it's, I think there's less of this in the later episodes. I mean, also they're not in the US a lot in the later episodes, but and then in the next episode they go to a fancy silent auction for very, very wealthy people, and they both are dressed to the nines and look fantastic. But at the door, at the entrance, right, John last minute says to Jane, I'm gonna go in as catering instead. So like, because that's the only way he'll blend in, and he hands her his Gucci jacket. And even though she's surprised by it, I thought it was interesting that she kind of accepts it right away. She's like, okay, because what he says makes perfect sense. He's like, if I go in there as a guest, I'm gonna be one of six black guests and they're all gonna know each other. So I'm gonna stick out. And so she's like, okay. I wonder if she wasn't a person of color herself, like if she was also white, if she would resist more. She was like, no, I want, you know, like I want you with me. And they're like, oh no, that's not gonna happen, whatever. You know, like I wonder if that would be if she would get it right away. If her character was white, you know?
That's so
What do you
interesting.
think?
I mean,
Yeah. What do you
I
think?
obviously I got it right away because he's so right that there would be community of
Yeah.
the people who would be invited to a function of this kind of, you need to be in this certain
Wealth.
income
Yeah.
bracket,
Yeah.
that they would definitely have awareness of each other. Because I mean, you, when you are any situation where there are fewer of you
Yeah.
in a large group, you know,
Yeah.
because it has happened to me as a woman being in certain settings.
Yeah.
Like I definitely know every other woman who is in this setting.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It would be interesting. I thought they did a good job of him explaining it so quickly,
Yeah.
so that even if you as an audience member didn't get it, it was like, okay, like accept that he understands the world enough to know that this is how it operates. And then they used it to such like powerful, like they used him being the cater waiter so well too. with I think, your I mean, plan?
You are obviously a very progressive and like known, you know, like aware, you know,
I
white
try.
person, like, you know, but
try.
I feel like there are like, and I've, you know, run into people all the time where to them racism doesn't exist and they're
Okay.
colorblind. Like that
True
still
enough.
happens, you know, that still happens. And
Just
so I feel like depending on the character, right? It's like, I do feel like it would still be realistic if there was more resistance depending on the, on where on the spectrum
Yeah.
of awareness Jane's character was, if she, because it's like
Yeah,
if
no.
they are a character who has never experienced racism.
You're right. I think also it's just, for me, it's beyond racism. It's just about like at some point, hopefully in your journey as a person, you come to realize that if someone's telling you something about their experience, whatever it is, you listen to them.
Right.
And you give them like the agency to believe them.
Yeah.
So for me, it's also that.
But see, that's also a very aware thing that not everybody does, because a lot of people want to tell you what you should feel and think, you know?
No. Yeah,
and,
it's true.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
I hate it when people do it to me. And
Right.
I hated it when people do it to me. And then, of course, it makes you silent, which is the whole point.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, it's like, if
yeah.
you want people to share with you, which
yeah.
is what they want, right? Like
right.
both Jane and John clearly want the other one to open up to them, partially because of the power dynamics, partially
yeah.
because of the relationship dynamics.
Yeah.
But like, if you want someone to open up to you, when they do, you should listen.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And she does, which is lovely for her as a character, but also is the right move if you're
right.
trying to gather intelligence. So it works on both levels.
Right.
Her
And
character.
I don't know if I'm remembering correctly, but I think it's at the end of this episode that they get, that they actually get together as a romantic couple.
Do they? I
I
can't
think
remember
so.
either.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they sleep in the same bed and then they wake up. Is that what I can't remember either?
Yeah. It's not important. But it's
yeah.
like, but it is, it does bond them. Yeah. Because the
For
next
sure.
episode they go to the ski slopes.
Ski.
Yeah.
Right, which is your next.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next one you mentioned already, and I think this one is fascinating because it was so subtle that I almost missed it at first. And it was in the context of me thinking about talking about this show with you that I like, but I was like, oh, there was something there. And I rewatched the scene and rewatched the scene. And I was like, wow, there's actually a lot there in that really short little moment.
There is.
And
I didn't catch it. I didn't. How did you know he was speaking Swahili? Because that was the thing I
didn't
catch.
I always
catch.
Watch with subtitles on.
Okay.
And it
okay.
said speaking Swahili.
Because that's pretty. Because that's pretty important in unpacking what's happening here. Because
yeah,
to me, it was
yeah.
like, oh, he's just
gibberish,
you know,
or
playing
something.
dumb.
Yeah.
Oh, he's just
Yeah.
playing dumb. You
Yeah.
know, like whatever it is. But the choice
Well,
he makes is very intentional.
Yeah. So for the listeners, like what happens is, so he is there to spy on this very, very wealthy woman, and she goes in and she flashes her Alpine club, which is like the fancy rich, you know, like richer than already, you know, car to get into.
Yeah.
What are those things called?
Gondoliers.
What are they called?
Gondoliers.
Gondoliers. Yeah. Gondoliers. So she gets in, and then when he walks up to go in, he doesn't have a card, but the staff person doesn't even ask him for one. Like the person had, I think, asked her for one, or yeah, like something had happened so that, like,
well, he does say this is for Alpine Club members only.
Yeah, he
he
says
immediately
that.
Assumes like,
yeah,
you know.
So that's what I'm saying, that he immediately assumes that he is not he could not be an Alpine Club member.
Yes,
which I was
definitely.
Like, wow, I totally missed that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he speaks Swahili to him, just, you know, just like phrases. It's not divulged what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And then just walks on. Mm-hmm. And then the staff member is so like kind of stunned that he just lets him go.
Yeah.
But
he kind of
I did,
does the like, what the, you know, but like not enraged, just kind of like, what just happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
The staff
yeah.
member.
But I just thought that it was so interesting that in that like, yeah, you had to pretend to be a foreigner, like that Donald Glover, John had to pretend to be a foreigner to pass, like not a Black American, mm-hmm. but yeah. So I thought that that was very, very interesting, that there needed to be more like mystique or like, you know, like to,
yeah.
to it for him to be able to be like potentially even accepted as an Alpine Club member. Yeah.
Yeah. And that he didn't speak French, because there's plenty of Africans who speak French, because then there would have been more of an in, like a way in for this guy, the employee, potentially they might also speak French, you know, but he picked something that, okay, this guy is not going to be able to say anything to me. And I'm so glad you caught it, because I think that's an interesting thing that is difficult to portray, the privilege of Africans versus African Americans, but it's something that I've read about, you know, in memoir and in different books I've read, that like, you know, it is definitely perceived differently in the international community and even in the United States.
Yeah.
Like with academic appointments, with all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And how there is this kind of separation. Oftentimes people will say, I'm African, like they'll be very intentional about it. And it's mostly within academia that I've seen it discussed.
Yeah.
And I just like, that's so cool that you picked that up and that they found a way to kind of unpack that just a little bit.
Yeah. And also John's expression once he got onto the gondolier and had a moment to himself.
Yes,
and
for
like
sure.
his like kind of like sighing, I thought was so telling. You know, it was just like a second. And it was I thought it was just brilliantly done, that it was it felt like the weight of racism or like the stereotypes that he was just like, oh my God, you know? And you know, honestly, like I of course view with the lens of being an American, and like this scene actually takes place in Italy, you know, but it's a very international setting, because it's a fancy ski resort.
Wealthy.
Right. Yeah. but yeah, but so that's why it's like, yeah. Anyway, like that almost didn't matter, right? Like, but yeah, it was a fascinating tiny scene of like 10 seconds or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I loved his reaction, because you definitely, it felt like, oh, this shit again, kind of like, no matter where I go, here it is.
Yeah, yeah. He just seemed very exhausted.
And constantly, and he's like taking off his mask for a moment, right?
Right, right, because he's alone. Yeah,
yeah.
He's alone, yeah, yeah.
Because they're also negotiating that in their interpersonal relationship. The
right.
masks that they're wearing for society, the ones they're wearing with each other. And I mean, I think that's the part of the meat of this series that interested me the most. That, like, I was like, oh, the action, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know. We were talking about the violence is a little much for both of us.
Yeah.
But there's
so that stuff I loved.
Yeah, but so much very interesting interpersonal, you know, things going on. I love that. I don't know if you know this, Allison, but the person who plays John's mom in the show is his real mom.
Oh, wow, I didn't know
in
that.
Real life. And I thought that was really, really sweet. And, you know, seeing an Asian character and a Black character being main characters leading a show, like that's so rare, you know, and being real, being like relatable human, you know, not caricatures. It's like, I just felt really grateful to have that. Yeah.
And I think people are really responding to that. You can see people, at least for me on social media, like that they're responding to seeing a Black character, an Asian character, and that's not the whole story.
Right.
It's not a story about that.
No.
It's a story about something else.
So it's like, it's not a caricature. That's what I mean. Like, because if it was a story about just about stereotypes of what they are like,
Or just about the challenges that they, you know what I mean? Like, it could also be not a caricature, but something about like, oh, this is the challenges, or this is a heavy drama about what it's like, you know, it feels like they're people.
Yeah.
And these are their
people
identities.
First. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like everything, but it's not like it ignores it, right? Because everything that we talked about is the subtleties of how it affects them every day. So they're not turning away from it. But this is how it's so smart, and how like they can include that and pack the same punch, but in such more subtler, abbreviated and like concentrated sort of way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is such a delicate needle to thread.
Yeah.
where you're acknowledging your character's identity, but you're not making the narrative about those identities.
Absolutely.
And they do a really good job of that.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think too, like, it gives people who aren't interested in that, sadly, I think part of the reason this is so commercially successful is because it does thread that needle so well.
They just miss it. They just totally over their head everything. Like, they would not get any of this that we talked about. Yeah.
It's like when you watch a kid's movie with a kid, you know, and they don't get the adult jokes.
Yeah.
You do. It's sort of like that on a, you know, it's like you could bring up these things to them and they would have a totally different response to them. I'm really grateful that you pointed these all out, because I really did respond, especially to the catering one, because that was to me the most like explicit. He explained why, you know, he did so that would have been a harder one to miss. But I also think if you're somebody who is engaged in racial stereotypes, it probably would have made you perfectly comfortable. Like, it wouldn't make you uncomfortable that a Black man says, oh, hey, I'm not going to fit in with the wealthy people, I'm going to go be a cater waiter. So it works as drawing attention and criticism, but then it also can validate and affirm people who think these things. So it's really, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really well done.
Very, very interesting. Yeah.
And I'm so glad you watched with subtitles, because I thought he did speak French when I just listened to it the first
time. Oh, yeah.
Because it's low volume.
Yeah.
He kind of just mutters.
He kind of just mumbles and moves on. Yeah. Yeah. I tend to watch everything with subtitles. Yeah. And it's bad when it gives away a punchline.
That's the thing I hate about it. I hate that.
Yeah.
And I also don't like it when it's like size audibly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
it's like upbeat music or something. But, you know, my excuse is English is my third language.
Is and it really? So I guess I knew is. That, but I had forgotten.
Yeah, because, I was born in Korea as a Chinese. And so, and any sort of accent or mumbling, I have a really hard time understanding for some reason. I feel like really more than other people in the US that I know. Like,
well, I mean, my kids lots of times watch with subtitles. I think I do think that as subtitles have become more mainstreamed, they are doing less work to make things completely audible. Like, like, I do think there's a relationship that's happening where it's like, well, they can turn on the subtitles.
And, yeah.
Because people do just watch things with subtitles.
And I don't know, you know, you are definitely more of a film professional. I'm not at all.
Well, you write about film. That's a film professional.
Is the audio, the sound differences, volume differences in shows that it's like, you know, certain scenes, it's so loud. And then like, if you leave it at the same volume, then it's super quiet. And if you're a parent, you know, many parents I'm sure who are listening would know that it's like, my kid's sleeping. And so you're like, can't adjust to the right temperature or right volume level. And it's like, that is a very, very pet peeve. But like, so that is like something that subtitles also can help with.
I agree. And it's also a pet peeve of mine. I used to yell at the TV a lot. Oh, what's up with this mix? Like, I would get so frustrated because I think oftentimes it's mixed for theater and then it's not remixed because of budgetary constraints.
Okay.
They aren't going back in and remixing it for home use, although they do if they have money. Because the theater experience is very different, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're fully focused. We don't have the laundry going and the dishwasher. Yeah. You know, like, there's so much background noise, I think, oftentimes in our everyday lives. That in the theater.
Even in the theater, though, I don't like it when suddenly it's so loud. And then I'm like, what did they say? I mean, I'm in my 40s, so, like, you know, you gotta, like.
And you can't turn the subtitles on, Rochelle, in the theater. And you can't rewind it, you know, like, because I find, like, that seemed important, you know, sometimes when I'm watching something, I would excuse not understanding some of it. And then something will happen. I'll be like, oh, that was important. I can tell. Yeah. So we need to go back. So anyway, the upsides of watching it with subtitles is I have noticed that a couple other times, not just you noticing it with Swahili, but sometimes things that I assume are not to be heard are in subtitles, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
Because they should turn it up. they want me to know, they need to turn it up.
Yeah.
Well, any other last thoughts on our conversation? Or
I don't think so. This has been delightful. Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah.
Thank you for joining me. I knew it would be delightful. I was excited for an excuse to talk to you about like film and television things because I always appreciate your writing on it. And
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always a pleasure to talk to you, no matter what it's about. Yeah.
That too. That's true. So if people would like to find you, Michelle, where would they find you? And you have a forthcoming memoir, correct?
Yeah.
I'm very excited
so,
to read.
Thank you. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Michelle Yang Writer. That's Yang, Yang, Michelle with two L's. And then my forthcoming memoir is called Phoenix Girl, How a Fat Asian with Bipolar Found Love. And that should be coming out in November of this year, which is
that
very
is
soon.
So exciting.
Yeah, from Fifth Avenue Press. So thank you for watching out for that. Yeah.
Yes, I am thrilled because I first became aware of you, Michelle, through your writing on having bipolar. And I just always appreciate how much more we're all talking about mental health and mental health advocacy. And I just read The Collective Schizophrenias, which was on my list, and I was meant to read it, but I kind of just kept, I was like, I don't know. And I just read it by Esme Weijun Wang, for those of you who don't know, and she lives with schizoaffective disorder. And I was talking about it with a friend who lives with mental health diagnoses. And she was saying, like, she's just blown away that someone can even write about it because it's so challenging to live with it and live through it. And it feels so vulnerable. And sometimes it's even difficult to tell people what you're living with, like just in your day-to-day life.
I mean, it definitely is. It was a huge hurdle to tell people, you know, I kept it a secret for 20 years, you know? And so it's like a big thing that now I have a book out coming out about it.
Right.
And I know that book was a first, you know, for many. And it's like the reason why I wrote mine was, you know, when I was first diagnosed with bipolar one and just devastated because, you know, I was hospitalized and, you know, going to the library looking for, I was like, I wanted to have an example of somebody who's doing okay and living with serious mental health condition. And I couldn't find any of them, especially with, you know, like kind of a BIPOC point of view, you know, and, and there are more now, like Esme Juwan's book.
Yeah.
So that's good. But I don't know how surprised you'll be that you'll find that every time I'm like, oh, I'm writing a mental health memoir. I'm writing a memoir and this you know, memoir coming out and the subtitle is How a Fat Asian with Bipolar Found Love. People immediately go to, oh, The Collected Schizophrenias, you know, Esme Juwan. And I almost have a defensive reaction, like,
sorry.
No, you don't have to at all. Like I know we're good, but it's like when people don't know me at all. Right. And they don't know what my story is and I'm just like, oh yeah, but I can have one too. You know, like,
oh, they say it like there's already been one.
Especially early in my writing journey.
Oh,
like
goodness.
I'm much more confident now. I think later, you know, now that I started the book in like late 2018, early 2019. Yeah. And so I'm like years in deep, right? But like early on, it was, you know, kind of, I was like insecure, like, you know, and I mean, every time a submission from a big five publisher said no, they said they had a very similar book coming
they
out.
They didn't. Oh, okay. I'm like, they
and
didn't all like, reference her book. My
no,
goodness.
No, they
like,
said they had a very
book.
No, they had a very similar book that they just review. And I'm like, how can it be similar? This is my life story. And I'm ethnic Chinese, born in Korea, like moved when I was 9. But, you know, but there is this idea that like you get a quota.
For sure.
And we're kind of getting there with Asian memoirs, Asian American experience stories, I feel like and it's very sad because of course I don't agree with that, you know?
Of course
and,
not.
But yeah, it is.
I just, for the record, want to say I'm definitely not saying it in the context of we have one. And we're good. I was just kind of, I was trying to bring it up in a way of saying, I think it's so important to write about this, these conversations. Well, and I think it is such a vulnerable thing. And I also want to say, a friend of mine who has bipolar, when she got the diagnosis, they basically were like, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, your life
That's
is done.
That's what I felt like. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was so hopeless.
Yeah.
For a while. And it was institutionalized, like you're saying, like not only the institutionalization, but then the further, like you can go to the support group where everyone sits around and talks about how their life is over. It's just like, this. So I think that, and this, it is obviously you're in a very special situation because you have your own unique story, but I just feel like in general, there is a lot of, we have one of these already.
Yeah.
I'm always like so curious what it is, you know, like, what is it saying they have one of? Is it an Asian American memoir? Is it a mental health memoir? Is it a woman memoir? Is it a, you know, like, because really you can very easily erase people's experiences.
Yeah.
Whatever they are.
Yeah.
By saying,
and Wei Jun Wang's story and mine could not be more different, like, other than both being, you know, East Asian women, I guess, you know, like, I know she's comes from a Taiwanese family, I believe. But like the way she writes it, it's essays, right? It's collected essays. And I mean, her condition is very different than mine. And I also like follow her on social media and things and like know her day-to-day life experience. And it is, you know, beyond the book, and it's so different than mine, you know? And so, and I shouldn't have to even say that, obviously. I shouldn't have to point it out. But it is, it's like, it's either Esme Wei Jun Wang or I get Amy Tan. Are you, can you believe it? Mm-hmm. Amy Tan is still what top of mind for.
Really?
Like, so it's like, if you are more of a, you know, well-read person, I think you go Esme Wei Jun Wang. But if you are like, you know, not as, then people just immediately connect with Amy Tan is the Asian book that I've read, you know, like,
which is just like, wow, you know, it's fiction. And I mean, and it's just not current and it's just different. I mean, there's a lot of things going on there, but I am sorry that happened.
Oh, no,
and I wish I was more surprised.
That,
and I'm glad you found a publisher that you are excited about and who's excited about you and is throwing you a book launch. And I think it's just important to, get the stories out in the world and make them available for people. And there will always be gatekeepers, and lots of times they just aren't interested in narratives that are complex in any way. And yours is, it's in the subtitle, you know, like, it's in that, like you're saying right up front, like, this is not one thing. This is many things. I am many things.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of gatekeepers and people uncomfortable because they really want people and writers to be one thing. And people aren't. As a person who listens to a new poem every week, that's part of what I love about it.
Right.
Is it's just proof to me, like, there's no one like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's enough.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to read your book.
Thank you.
I have seen the cover art, and it is so beautiful. And I get really excited about art because I feel like it speaks to us in a different like space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than words.
Yeah. I'm so, so thrilled about the cover art. Yvonne Chan is the artist who did it, and she's amazing. My book was edited by Hannah Beresford, who is also amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm just like so, so thrilled. Yeah.
Oh, it's gonna be great. Well, thank you, Michelle. Thank you to all of our listeners. We appreciate that you have many, many, many other choices of podcasts to listen to. So we appreciate that you spent your time with us. We'll see you next time or hear you next time. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.